So first of all, thank you for coming. I'm terribly excited that I can talk to people that are not computer geeks. And for me, it's all about data on the web. And it's great that people from universities and people from museums come up to me and say, like, hey, can you talk about this stuff? And I'm like, yes, I can. And also, when I moved to London, to England, the first thing that I actually realized is that museums here don't suck. So there's always there's always things for kids to do. It's not boring. And as I'm a 12-year-old kid, I did the activities in the Transport Museum and all these things. It's really good, quite fun. And they're free. So when it's raining, as it always does, it's good to be there. The internet is a new media. And it's quite funny because new media is such a swear word right now, much like Web 2.0 becomes, like, that was last year. Web 3.1572, second edition. And it's a highly distributed media. It's available 24/7, and it's easy to be a part of. The biggest problem is it's huge. It's just massive. I mean, like, the amount of information you find there, misinformation, and the amount of stuff put on the web and never ever looked at and never ever cleaned out, and it's just amazing how big it is. It's just massive, and trying to find a way that people find your cool information rather than the outdated information is a complete pain. Like, I've been writing tutorials for web developers since 1997, and I've always made them up to date. I always created new ones. And when I look at Google and I do a search, I find something really terrible as the first result. And I'm like, can we please delete this? But we can't, because it's so big and so huge and so distributed, which is also its benefits. So the sheer size of the internet makes it hard to be found and get your content out to people. That's always when I was freelancing or was working for agencies. They're like, yeah, we do this thing about, like, we have clothes that we sell on the web. Can we be number one in Google? And you're like, yeah, of course, because nobody else does this. That's such a novel idea. Like, maybe you should sell books as well, because that's not been done before either. So trying to get people to be number one, to be found on the web, is just a total pain by now. And that's why people spend more and more time optimizing their products for search engines than for their end users, because they want to be found, and that's something that they can actually measure. Like, oh, I had so-and-so many users, so-and-so many million users, that they went there and basically threw up, or just went there and went somewhere else after they looked at your stuff. Doesn't matter. I had lots of users. Every customer I have always wanted to have a statistic package. They never looked at those things, or they never made anything with it. A statistics package on your website is there to find out where are your problems. Where do people leave your website? Where do people don't find information when they enter data? Where do people wait for far too long for the information? That's what statistics are for, not to pat yourself on the back and say, like, I had 50,000 users this month. To have success in reaching people on the web, we have to rethink some ideas. And I'm bored of search engine optimization. I'm bored to work for computers. I'm bored to optimize systems for computers that read things rather than for people that just want to have information. I'm a big advocate of accessibility, and I've been reading a lot of books about it. I mean, I had an own conference about accessibility. To me, it's about going to a website and getting the information that I came for immediately and then leaving or just doing something with that website. I surf a lot on a BlackBerry lately because I'm traveling all the time. BlackBerries don't have any JavaScript, don't have any CSS. So if the first 50 pages on your document without CSS is your navigation, you would have lost me because I'm not scrolling with that little bar over there. That's just not going to happen. So the old school model, you build a site and people come. Like, it's a field of dreams. When you build it, they will come. So we had our site, and there's, like, readers who are all users on the web as well. It's what people don't forget all the time. Like, oh, people come and read my website. No, people come and find on their website what they were looking for when they came through a search engine. Hello and welcome to our website texts are completely redundant, because this is not 1996, so you don't have to explain to people what a website is anymore. I live in North London, and I'm the only one in my block that basically didn't have the sticker no junk mail. So every pizza leaflet in North London ends up in my mailbox. And none of these pizza leaflets on the front say, welcome to this pizza leaflet. It's A4 in 16 colors. You need to be able to read. And, like, all this technical information that we put on websites, you wouldn't put on a pizza leaflet. Next time your manager comes up and say, like, can we say it's optimized for 1024? Don't care. Don't want to know. Most people don't know what the resolution is. It works to some degree, only if you're really a starting point. You know, if you're the homepage of somebody's computer, like if you're an ISP, or when come with the AOL CD or with the CompuServe CD or what the computer they got from Aircar from Warehouse, or when it's their news site or their sports site, something they set as their bookmark. That's the only thing where they come back to your website every day and look at it, which is another problem as well, because nothing of that gets cached properly, and that's just not on. I'm sorry. I can't work like this. I'm in my trailer. So for normal websites, like, you're not Yahoo, you're not MSN.com, you're not
Eurosports or whatever people look at first. People come in a roundabout way. They don't come to your website, but they come through other partners and other systems. Most probably search engines, because those things scrounge the web, get information, most of the time the wrong information because you haven't set up your site correctly. And they find something, then click to it and come to your site. The other is partner sites, like if you partner with other museums and you say like, hey, if you want to know something about maritime historical information, go to the Maritime Museum here, these are our partners. Okay, I just spent 6 hours on the B&A and now I'm going to the Maritime Museum. Then you have paid links, which is a classic search engine optimization thing, which dies now quickly and rapidly. And it's just a stupid idea to pay for search engine optimization for other people to link to your site. Because I can set up a website that links to your site and get you into Google on the first place within 3 hours. A day later, you'll be blacklisted and never ever listed by Google again. But if I invoice you after that first day and run off, I made a profit and hey, I'm a great SEO specialist. So it's this rat race that doesn't work. So we said people come late who have to sing or recite a poem.
I am late. It was the boat. I'm sorry. That's a haiku.
Nice. Wrong kind of leaf on the river. And lately we have the social media. And I just came from a workshop in Australia where I talked about JavaScript and I was sitting in front of 7 people. And the guy that talked about social media was about 50 people, all of the beautiful girls. And I'm like, yeah, wrong topic. And social media is just like Twitter and these crazy things where people talk to each other and tell each other about your products. And it's a great, great new thing, which has been around for ages, but now it's blossoming and getting better and getting bigger as well. I realized that when I built something and all of a sudden Steve Fry was Twittering about it, I had 7,000 new users in the first 15 minutes. And I'm like, wow, it really is a big thing that basically people don't go from website to website, but they use communication channels that are off the website in other systems, may it be chat channels, may it be messengers or now Twitter from their mobile phones talking to each other about cool things and coming to a website that way. It really messes with the whole statistics packages that we have. It messes with the search engine optimization, and I love it. I don't want to be predictable to say, like, if I do this, people will come. You have to put good content on the website. That's the most important thing. If you have some that other people don't have, people will come through channels that we're going to come by later. To make this work on a much bigger scale, we have to rethink the web. And in my case, that's basically thinking not of your website as your website, but thinking of your website as a content. So the web is not a broadcasting media with receivers. You don't put a website out there and people will come because your website is so awesome. And they will look at it and like love that you chose these colors and these fonts and these kind of things. That's what people that build websites will tell you, and people that build websites and look at other people's websites will look at. But there's an amazing amount of really bad-looking websites out there that people use daily because they basically have the information. It's not receivers, because every receiver is also a broadcaster. So it's a read-write web. Everybody who's going on the web, in some degree, gives something back to the web. If it's just clicking on links or sending a comment there or just sending that link to another friend or even bookmarking it, that is already interacting with it much more than we did with the TV beforehand. When you go on the web, even if you don't know it, you're already taking part of that web and you're making that website better or you're making that website differently. And you're being logged. People know what you do on these websites and see, if they look at the statistic packages, what's going on. Starting a blog is really easy. Signing up for Twitter, uploading photos to Flickr. All of these things are dead easy. And when I remember when I started with web development, it was basically you write your HTML, upload it via FTP, reload it in the browser and hope it looks right. And it didn't have full FTP access as well, so you had to zip it and upload it and unpack it and all kind of stuff. If you rethink of your site as content and not as a site and not as like a visual construct and like, oh, we have to make it pretty and people have to go there, then any of these broadcasting stations can be a relay for your message. Because there's nothing better than make people talk about your product for you. Of course, some of them would slag it off. Some of them would say something wrong about it. But most of the time, if information comes from my friend, I trust it much more if the information comes directly from a source. All of these readers actually go to your content and go back to it, and you get information from the readers about your content if you allow them to write comments, if you allow them to vote up and down, these kind of things. So all of this is becoming, out of a sudden, an information flow that goes back and forth between your readers and users and your content, rather than your website. If you just have visitors that you know the number, that's just not much information. If people can leave a comment, then there's a different information flow there. Of course, there's a moderation problem. But then again, The Guardian, for example, had unmoderated forums since 1996. And they managed to actually make the community of these forums clean itself up. They talk yet to other people and have access to other distribution channels you aren't even aware of. So the amount of stuff that I throw out as software for free, and all of a sudden people say like, hey, I managed to send that to a school that they now know how to do. I build an interface for YouTube that is available for people with learning disabilities, and all of a sudden I got an email from a company that does wheelchair laptops, electrical wheelchair laptops, and said like, hey, this is the out-of-the-box interface for YouTube now for these wheelchairs. And I'm like, okay. And this is basically these channels that I would have never reached, because I wouldn't have emailed people that build wheelchairs like, do you want a video interface? I didn't think that far. All of this happens, they talk to each other and they send it outside to channels that you don't know. So your content goes out there. People get the message that you want to give. And if it's a museum and it's opening hours, people will come because they know from your friends that it's open, rather than having to go to that website. So you validate content on the web with links and quoting from other sources. That's why when you write something in Wikipedia and you don't give a citation, it will not be entered in there because it says like this, you made this up. Where is the other source of truth that actually makes it worthwhile? Of course, I can fake this other source of truth as well, but that's not the point. People add their own opinion and allow for others to give theirs. So basically, they would blog about something that you've written and say like, okay, that was rubbish, and then people in the comments say like, actually, it was not rubbish. And you get all this information flow, and if you set up your searches on the web, like if you set search bars yourself, you basically find these things from other people, and it's just great to see. I mean, I've got several searches running every day for my name and some of the products that I've written just to know what people say about them. When blogging started, everybody pinged back to your blog and you knew what's going on, but you had to turn it off as a lot of spammers did this to get their links inside your pages and these kind of things. People also mix your information with other sources to prove a point or validate it and basically show it, like photos. Best example was always photos on a map. Out of a sudden, the photos had context, like location context. I know where to go to find that boat. I didn't know beforehand, and if you told me the address, I'm like, eh. This is like journalism works, actually. You find an information, and then you find another source to prove it, and another source to say where it's been before, and if we learned from it before, has this happened before? And then we validate it that way. Only on the internet, it's on a much wider scale, and it's much, much more media-heavy as well. People upload videos, upload audio tracks, upload pictures to actually prove a point, and it's not as professional. That's why it's great that people from museums start getting interested in doing these kind of things. Same with librarians. I mean, people are always like, okay, we're the web, we're the new media, we're so much better than these old people. If you want to know how to write a taxonomy, go to a librarian. They love doing that, and it's very, very impressive how fast they're doing it. It's just, wow. I love this. That's good German in me. The power of this distribution is very much obvious if you ever try to pull something off the web. And I'm the kind of guy, when I give a talk, I don't have any script. I normally come, there's not much filtering. And it's quite bizarre when a day later I look at what people quoted me on Twitter, what I just said, and I'm like, there's just no way I can pull it off the web anymore. So how can you be a part of this? This is cool. You want people to talk about your stuff and somehow actually get it out there. How can you be part of this? The first one is to make your content easy to access. And the really, really no-brainer for that is that you structure your websites in a semantic manner. You don't put them like in HTML constructs that don't make any sense. You put them in headlines, you put them in titles, you put them in links, and you put them in paragraphs and lists. That's all you have, actually, on the web. This is what HTML does for you. HTML5 will be cleverer, will give you more semantic value, but right now we only have this. The title of your document, of your HTML document, is terribly important because this ends up, first of all, on top of your browser. This ends up on search results in search engines as the link. This ends up in people's bookmarks. This ends up in people's shared bookmarks. This ends up on the tab in the browser next to other tabs. So the title is like the entry point. When I'm blind and I go to your website and I listen to the web, the first thing I hear is the title. If the title says untitled document, I'm not likely to go there. If the title says like welcome to information about this and that, great, that's what I came for. My best is people that use like punctuation to make like cool titles with like lots of colons to have this like double pointed line. Imagine the first impression of your website when you listen to it is colon, 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 colon. That's what I would think of you. It starts by structuring the websites, and it continues with adding semantic richness with RDF and microformats. RDF is embedded data in your HTML that makes it more obvious what something is, like in a comment. And microformats is basically putting spans and divs and classes on different elements to say what these elements are, what HTML wasn't telling us. So that this is really an address, this block of text, or that this block of text is a review. This block of text is a, what else do we have, a listing. So names, all kind of things that basically HTML doesn't tell you, you can put in there. And then other systems can actually read that and find out what is the address of that page. So we don't have to scan through the text and hope to find a place name that matches with another place name. So it gets even easier for providing data feeds in Atom or RSS. And it actually ends with the Rolls-Royce distribution, which is your own API, which is a programming interface to your website, to your information. So people can say what they want, and they get only that data back rather than having to go through your page and trying to find out what's what. Semantic document structure, RDF, and microformats are useful for other machines to make sense of your content. So when I write a script or I am a bot from a search engine, I come to your site, and I find the title, I know that's important. If I find an H1, I know that's important. If I find a link with proper text in there, and that links to another document, as a search engine, I say like, okay, this other document gets these keywords in that link to actually go to it. So I make sure that other sites in my whole, other pages in my whole site can found by having proper links in there. If 500 of your links say click here, you shouldn't be wondering why nobody can find your content. So especially search engines love them. And one thing that made it for me really, really obvious, and I didn't know that we really do this already, which is rather embarrassing, is that when Yahoo opened their index as an API. So now you have full access to the Yahoo index via this Boss search API. So instead of having to do a web search, you can actually write this on your command line in your own scripts, and you can use our search index to display it with other information that you have. And we do this because we know that search engines are dying. Search engines, catch all search engines, are actually a really stupid thing to do. Because if my mom were to look for Apple on the web, she would look for other things than I would. And a search engine can't know this. But if I have a search engine that is for cooking recipes, and if I got a search engine for gadgets, those do know what's going on there. And I cannot ask you every time, are you looking for food or are you looking for shiny plastic things that are far too expensive for their own good? That I don't know from a user, and they won't tell me. I mean, people don't put things in their profiles because they're scared of putting information out on the web, which is a thing about generations. Kids these days, the other day I gave a talk for like 14-year-olds. You have to stop them to put the information on the web that they shouldn't put there. And with us, it's like, no, you don't get my birth date because then you know my credit card number and you will ruin me and steal my identity. And then you go into the bank. And you're basically in a waiting room, and she asks you, so I have to ask you some security questions, like, what's your mother's maiden name? Great security question. And what's your birth date? And I'm like, what's your manager's name? She's like, why? Well, you just asked me in front of a full waiting room my security questions. If I wanted to find other people's information, I just sit here all day long with my laptop, type away while they answer the questions for you. But on the internet, it's scary. We don't do that. The search index of Yahoo is fully accessible for you through that Boss search engine. And you can use that to actually make results more useful and actually mix it with other information with your own database, for example, to mash it up and say like, okay, this is our information and other museums have this information. You can also write a search engine that says like, only search these five sites, like a detailed only for museum search engine or for dentists or for florists or whatever you want to do. You can also get very clever. This is a system that one of our engineers has written. It's called Ask Boss. Basically, it's a natural language analysis of search results. So if you do the search term, who is Batman in the Dark Knight? The search result of Yahoo Photos has like a Lego Batman and like screenshots of the comics and something that's not related to Batman at all. And basically, the first result on Google is the Joker, which is not Batman in the latest movie, is he? Whereas taking only our search index and filtering down by doing an image, a proper analysis of that text in that image and the image around the text around that image, we were actually able to filter it down to Christian Bale. So another thing Boss does right now is provide you a mainstream channel for semantic web and microformats. So when microformats and RDF, when people started talking about this, it was a geek thing. Nobody really understood what the hell we were doing there, because It's a chicken and egg problem. Why should I use microformats on my site? Nobody cares about them. Why aren't there any microformats on the web? Because nobody cares about them. So we never got anywhere with this, and people were completely nuts, like, oh, look, I've got 5 microformats on my homepage. Well done, you got 15 visitors as well. Great. Now, we actually use the SearchMonkey technology that we have, which is another way of designing search results in Yahoo. We had this technology that actually indexes microformats and RDF on pages and realizes that they're there. So we put them actually in web in the BOSS results as well. So when you do a search on BOSS, you will find you can get an XML document back with all the information we know about that page, which is the description, the keywords, and also the RDF data and the microformats data, which is really cool to actually just graze, for example, and get like addresses from LinkedIn. Another interesting thing is the key terms parameter in BOSS. That one actually stores what were the keywords that people entered to end up on that website. By analyzing this, you realize, for example, which key terms people find things with, and then you realize that the real key terms should be more prominent somewhere in your page, in a title, in a heading, somewhere in a text. And I've written in like 20 minutes, I've written this little product called keywordfinder.org. As I get, domain is $15 now for 2 years, so I didn't quite care. So what that does is you find a key, you put a keyword in, and then it finds the first 20 results in Yahoo and lists you all these keywords that basically people entered. So if you want to have just a bunch of keywords to learn how to write your copy with, that's a really easy way to find out what the successful websites had that people found. And it's great. It's not like keywords that extracted from the text, we hope that they are, but these are the keywords that people really entered, which might be misspellings as well. This gives search engines access and also hardcore developers. So semantic data, maybe putting some microformats and RDF in there. But basically, your clean HTML is the most important thing. If you want to go further, of course, you make it even easier for people, and that's by providing an extra access. So your data is already on the web. If you think, like, I have a website that's protected, people have to go to my website to get my data, forget it. There's nothing you can hide on the web. My favorite is like photographers when like, oh, I put my photos online, but I don't want people to save them. How do I do this? Well, you put it on this memory stick and you leave it in your desk and you never put them online. This is the only way to stop people from downloading your photos. Because even a screenshot allows me to download your photos and I cannot protect the screenshot, can I? Your data is already on the web. If it's interesting enough, people will try to get to it and remix it. So like, you really put effort into it. Say I have a tourism site. A tourism tips site for London, which I wanted to write ever since I moved here, and I never got time to do it. And I want, for example, the opening times of the Victoria and Albert. Is anybody here from Victoria and Albert?
The light one.
Good. So this is not illegal, by the way. Victoria and Albert website. What is it? 10 lines of PHP. I go to the website. I do a curl call. Curl is a system that allows me to simulate any browser, simulate cookies, simulate any access to the website. I can send off any form with curl, I can get the data back, and I can be my own browser. And I can fake any browser in it as well. It's a wonderful, wonderful tool. It's built in Sweden, of course. I got these few lines here which basically say like, hey, I'm a browser and I want information. And I get the output, curl exec, is basically I download the HTML from that page. Three regular expressions later, I basically do an echo of the output, and these are the opening times that I can embed in my website any way I want to. So if you change it, that changes for me as well. And this is what's happening on the web. This is what people have been doing, and it's just a pain to do that because I don't want to go through that kind of level. So the opening hours would be useful as an RSS feed. RSS is really simple syndication, so it's a small XML document that basically tells me every time something happens to your page, this gets changed. And I only subscribe to that change thing, so I don't have to go to your page every day. Before RSS, I spent like 3 hours every morning to go through my favorite websites and start reading if something changed, and it never changed. Nowadays, the web actually to me looks like this, which is my Google Reader, and I'm subscribed to like 2,400 websites out there that I want to know what's going on. So every morning I go through that, and with J and K on my keyboard, I can see what's going on and quickly read through them. 20 minutes later, I got my update of the day. And I don't have to go to your website and cause a new visitor. Because every time I go to your website just to find new information, and I'm disappointed I don't find new information, but your stats will still say, hey, you had a returning visitor. People must really, really love your website. I'm just adamant enough to do it. With an RSS feed, I don't have people to actually go to my website. And this is what people forget about RSS feeds, that they're new statistics as well. People that read your RSS feed are as much users of your website that people just go to the website. But nobody puts statistics on RSS feeds because, ooh, strange new stuff, we don't do that. Some companies understood that very early. I mean, I've talked about The Guardian, and I don't work for them, but they're doing things so well at the moment, it's wonderful. They hired the right people, actually. Any content website on The Guardian, like travel restaurants, I have this little web feed thing up there. And if I click on that, I get that data as XML, and I can subscribe to that. Any of their content websites, because their content management system has been set up that way that you can get the RSS feed or you can get the page. Really easily done, rather than having to generate it from it. And they took the next steps as well, providing APIs to end users to filter down the data to exactly what they need. So an API, an RSS feed just tells me what changed. But in an API, I can say, like, only give me the changes in the last 5 months that had the keyword Madonna or elephant or not together. That doesn't happen most of the time. Or who knows. Now developers have access to all kind of data on the web to mix and match. And it's just, if you go to programmableweb.com, that one has all the APIs listed that people can use. And I think it's like 900 by now or something like that. There's so much information out there that you can use and remix. It's quite cool to have, but at the same time, it's a bit overwhelming. Because, like, what do I do with all this information? And do I really have time to dig into it? Programmable web. It's really hard to pronounce. It's a bit like CSS specificity. It's such a word. Whenever you do CSS training, you stumble over that one. It's as evil as the person that put the S in Lisp. And what they do with this information is they build blog plugins, so people in the blogging platform can now, hey, here's museum times of the Victoria and Albert, or like newest pictures of the Maritime Museum. They build Facebook applications, you know, the thing that kids use, the strange thing there, where you have a teddy bear and want to travel and throw sheep at you and these kind of things. They build other widgets, like for Yahoo homepage, for iGoogle, for NetVibes, or whatever is out there. And other distribution channels of data. They basically write things that, for example, turn RSS feed into a mailing to a mailing list. And information that you never reach, people that you never reach, but you reach them because you're offering this data in an easy-to-digest manner. The problem is that the more data sources you use, the more time you spend on reading API documentation, because every API is different. People think, like, say, like, okay, in this API, the search term is called S, in the other one it's called search, in the other one it's called query, And the result is XML in that format, JSON in that format, or a bitmap picture, I don't know. Every API is different, and documentation reading is not fun. Documentation writing is hard enough. The other problem is, of course, that the more sources you connect to, the more chances of error are there. So if I go, and I build a little widget that actually pulls information from 5 different museum sites, and one of them is down, I have to actually put something in there that the others get still loaded, and I have to test out that the right information comes back. And if you start blocking me, I have to find a way around that. And it's not easy to actually build anything. When it comes to performance of any website, the more stuff you pull in, the slower your website will be. If you can cut down on the HTTP requests outside to the web when you build your website, the faster your website will be. So that's a problem. So what we needed are systems to aggregate several sources painlessly. And one of them is Yahoo Pipes. This is what it looks like, the whole octopus thing. And it was a revolution. It was just like, wow. So you have something like a Visio or a database schema thing for the web. You can say, like, we want the user to enter something here, or that's basically like, get me a feed from here, a feed from here, a feed from here, put them all together and put them out. So this is like getting 5 different resources and putting one resource from it. And it's this visual, really interesting tool, really easily done as well. You can anybody who's used Visio before can do that. And also, when you drag these lines around, you basically, it highlights the points that you can connect to. So you can't even make mistakes in it because it doesn't allow you to connect things that shouldn't be connected, which is really, really nice to have. You can get the data back as XML, JSON, as a widget, as a map even, so you don't even have to write any widget yourself. It does the code for you, copy and paste it in your HTML and you're done. The problem was that it's first of all a visual interface, so a lot of blind people or like developers that can't use a mouse probably have been complaining for years, like, I would love to use it, it's exactly what I need to do, but I can't use it because I can't use a mouse properly, and I don't have Flash, and the interface doesn't work on my computer, and you're evil, and it doesn't work. So we're like, okay, what can we do with this? Because every time we do something that beautiful, people will come, where's the command line interface? The other thing is that you cannot use a pipe quickly in your code and change it on the fly. So if you built the pipe and it did all kind of clever things, and then you put it in the code, and for one of your implementations, you just need to change one bit in it. You cannot do that from the end code anymore. You have to go back to the interface, rewrite it, save it with another name, and get that information in there. There's no version controlling either. So if you changed it, you can have no undo, which is pretty annoying as well, especially when it gets complex. So that's one of the reasons why we came up with a new system with a different angle, and that's YQL. YQL is Yahoo Query Language, which is basically like SQL, whatever that means, database language. And that one allows you to actually get a SQL-style interface to all the data Yahoo has. Say, for example, you want to get photos of London that you are allowed to show in your own products. So they have to be Creative Commons licensed with a Creative Commons commercial license, just attribution. Basically, somebody took pictures, put them on Flickr, and said, like, okay, anybody can use this photo, just they have to mention my name and link it back to Flickr. So that's all you need to do for this kind of photo search. If you went through the Flickr documentation, that would be fun, because you actually have to find the authentication first and understand what's going on there, and then find the search terms and so on and so forth. In YQL, what you do is, first of all, you have to define London without a doubt. So London is not that much of a problem, except for Durex, the condoms. The brand is called London in Germany, so that might be pictures you don't want to display. Paris, the same problem with Paris Hilton and Paris the city. The first thing you do is we have a GeoPlaces. We have a GeoPlanet API that basically is a spatial location API that when you search, for example, London, you find London, gives you all the information up the hierarchy and down the hierarchy. So it will tell you London is in England, in Europe, on Earth, and we didn't go for planet yet, but we will soon. And it has these boroughs, and it has so many different areas, and all the information is there for you. We defined every place on Earth with a Where on Earth ID. So instead of having an ambiguous term like London, you have a single number that defines London, England. You say, select the Where on Earth ID from GeoPlaces, which is the data table with all the places of the geo information, where the text is London, UK. And that will give you the information. Then find photos that were taken there. So you select the ID of the photo, again, it's the same as the Where on Earth ID, from Flickr Photo Search. Pretty obvious what it does. It goes to Flickr, it goes to photos and searches photos, where the Where on Earth ID, and here is where you find where all these problems start with APIs. In the Places one, it's Where on Earth ID without an underscore. In the Flickr table, it's Where on Earth ID with an underscore. So having to read that up and find that out is annoying. But in this case, it actually, in the YQL interface, you press description on any of the data tables and it shows you all the available variables and the available outputs that you can use. So, okay, Flickr Photo Search, where the Where on Earth ID is in that selected Where on Earth ID from GeoPlaces. So that one does a lookup and gives you an ID back. And this one does a lookup in this table and matches this ID with that ID and gives you the ID of the photo back. Then we have to check that the license is the right one. So the license is 4, the number 1 to 7, and there's a data table as well that explains you which license is what. And then you put them all together. So you say, like, select star, give me all the information from Flickr Photos info, which is the information of any photo, and the rest of the search that we've done. And if you put this in the console, the YQL console is basically where you try these things out, and you get the information back. In this case, I do my call here, and then I get this XML feedback. And the first thing that I get is a diagnostics. It actually tells me which URLs it has called on the web for me, and how long it took, and what problems it had encountered. If there's any errors in there, it actually shows me errors as well. And then I get the data set back that gives me all the information that I wanted. So what I've done is with this one line of code, I would have had to do with 3 different curl calls and lots of filtering and lots of sorting out in the original one and testing if it really existed. Here are recent queries. Like if you play with the console for a longer time, it basically shows you what's going on here. Here are example queries that basically when you click on them, you find out how the different systems can be used and how you can link systems together. And here are basically the data tables. And these data tables are, for example, that photo search, photos info. And if you roll over them, you have a little description thing. That if you click the description thing, you basically get the information what is available to you. When you have this information, you have it as XML data or as JSON data. And that is always the same format. So you know how to use that information. And then you can build a little interface to show that data. I built that yesterday night because I'm going to Paris after this to talk to developers about this. And this one basically does this search that we just done. Then I just put a map with how many photos are in which area, and what the photos are, and you can click through them. So this is available. The slides will be on the web later on as well, so you don't have to write URLs down. All without having to spend hours on reading either the Flickr or the GeoPlanet API documentations, because you don't want to do that. It also helps immensely internally, as we had these varying APIs in all departments. We've been doing APIs for like 9 years, and all of them are different. So if when I did Yahoo Answers and I wanted to show Flickr photos, then they were like, oh, actually, you cannot do this because of the restrictions here and the server there, and you cannot access that server from the outside. And going through YQL, we basically make this thing really, really easy for us. I mean, YQL gives you access to all Yahoo services and to any data source on the web, including HTML microformats. So I could say select star from HTML where URL is the Victoria and Albert, and get me only the div with that ID. So I don't have to do the regular expression stuff that I've done before. So I can scrape any website and get that information from it. If you go to my homepage, icart.co.uk, none of this stuff is maintained by me on that website. I just have certain things that I pull from my blog, other things that I pull from SlideShare, other things that I pull from Flickr, from YouTube. So I maintain my website by going to other websites and uploading things. And I don't have to worry about it because with three YQL calls, I maintain the whole web page. And I've done a screencast where in 15 minutes I explained the code how to do it as well. It's that easy. Now here's really good news, because if you want to, I mean, now you have all these things on the right hand side where you say like photo search, Flickr, and like social information about Yahoo, delicious, upcoming, anything we basically have. But your stuff isn't there, which would be cool, because people then can say like, get me photos from the Victoria and Albert Museum where there's nudity involved, these kind of things. People look for that all the time, admit it. So you can easily add your own information to YQL with something we call open tables. What you tell us is the endpoint where we can get that information. That can be an RSS feed, this can be a search URL, this can be an API. API would be the best thing to have, but if you don't have one, it's a search thing works as well. Take young Jim O'Donnell here of the National Maritime Museum in London. The NMM is already a part of the comments on Flickr, so basically they donated all the photos that are basically so old that nobody knows who's taken them and put them on the comments on Flickr. That basically means anybody can use these photos for what they do, and they're awesome photos. They're like all these like polar exploration things, like at the turn of the century, like people digging into snow and ice and trying to find Megatron. Wonderful photos. He wanted to allow people to access the free data and filter it without providing an API, because an API is something that normally is not in your budget, right? So, like, keep the web running. That's the most important thing. So all he needed to do was write a simple XML file, and he even managed to do it without me. This is basically all he's written. This is the XML data, and there's documentation how to write that XML data, and I'm actually thinking about writing a visual interface that you can just copy and paste something, and it would create the XML for you, which would be much easier. So what he has done has for here is here nmnac.uk, and basically he has a quick search CFM file, which is basically as if you go to the website and do a search, that will be the same thing. Then you define which search terms you have, which other parameters you have on the URL, and the format RSS gives us back as XML. And then basically you define the search terms, authority, and the default, and you say which ones of these are mandatory and which ones of them are not mandatory. And that one, you can use that as an open table and say, use that XML file, which is on his own blog. And you can use that on your own server, or you can use it on GitHub or any other file sharing system or data sharing system. And you point to that and give it a name. So use this URL as NMM, and then like select star from NMM, where categories are the search term is Tower Bridge. And you can list several of those. You can have like one data table for your search, one data table for your taxonomies, one data table for just images, just videos. And you can say, use this one as that, use that one as that, and then you can do a select statement over multiple tables. That way, you could provide an API that is as easy to use as Flickr and GeoPlaces and everything to your systems by just pointing people to YQL and say, like, here's our open data table. We cannot list all of them in the right-hand side because then the interface would become completely useless. So this was a start, and now he's going nuts with it because he did this like photo search thing, building a KML feed with YQL and ColdFusion, mapping the sky with YQL and astrometry net, and all these little things. So let's take a look at this stuff later. So in conclusion, by opening your data to the web, you make the web users your data advocates. So you piggyback on people's social graph. You piggyback on people's connections with other people. Like, if your friend tells another friend about that your museum is cool, they will trust that friend more than when you go to the website and say, like, we're cool, come to our museum. So people get your data, and basically, you have cool photos, I put them on my blog, people are like, wow, this is what's in the National Maritime Museum, I didn't know this, I will go there tomorrow. I will donate a lot of money there. I will probably give them my firstborn. You know where I'm going with this. So you start by writing clean semantic websites, and this is something I've been advocating for 1996, and nobody does it, so let's forget that. You make it easier for people by providing data feeds. So, hey, an RSS feed is a really, really good idea, and it's not hard to do. It really isn't. Every content management system on this planet, unless it's written before 1995, will be able to give you RSS feeds of your data. And those that have been written before, somebody probably hacked them to do it. Okay. So you really go to town with having your own API, but that is a lot of commitment, because APIs basically means that you have the servers running for them, they have to be available all the time, and people use APIs a lot, so that's a lot of traffic for your site. That is really hard to measure and go to your manager and say, like, hey, we had so much traffic this month, and what do we get of it? I don't know, but people use it, it's really good. So making API scale is a really big pain, and you really have to be clever to do it. If you can't do that, a YQL open data table is actually pointing to a search engine on your site works as well, because through the YQL interface, I can go through your site and get photos and get information and get them filtered down in that classic fashion that I have to do. The other thing, when you do an API, you have to document it. And, oh my god, the amount of emails you will get, like, I don't understand what you mean by table, or I don't understand what bird is. Can you please explain that to me? Because otherwise you're an evil company that doesn't like developers. YQL handles the interface. You have that select star from photos where it contains nudity from VA collection. And the data conversion as well. So you can back as JSON or as XML, and you can reuse that easily in your own interfaces, which you don't have to write. YQL also limits the access to sensible level. So if people try to hammer your site to death to go to your API and basically download your whole collection in one hour, they cannot do that if you go through YQL, because they will be blocked after a while, which is a very, very good security measure as well. It works for us, so it can work for you, and that's actually all I have to talk about, so I thank you very much.